Welcome to Press Start, how to become a game developer. I'm Adam Ardisa Smita, CEO of Arsanesia and Vice President of Indonesian Game Association, will be your host for this episode. All right, and in this podcast, we will talk about game development and how to start your career in the game industry. We will invite experts from around the industry to share their stories and maybe can inspire you to become a game developer. So stay tuned, because Press Start will have a new episode every week on Thursday. And this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. So today we're having a special guest from Germany. Her name is Valentina. She is managing in the Indie Arena booth, the world's largest joint booth for independently developed games. Her focus is on curating the Indie Arena booth to reflect the entire creative and artistic spectrum of indie games. She also managing DreamHack's digital sister DreamHack Beyond on the Supercrowd side of things. We were going to talk about it more later on. So without further ado, we will invite Valentina to the stage. Hi.
Hi.
So nice to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course, no problem. By the way, in which city are you now?
In Hamburg, Germany. That's way up the north of Germany.
How do you think the situation ecosystem in these scenes in Hamburg? Is there many indie studio around there, or how about?
Yeah, we have quite a lot indie studios in Hamburg. Like, we also have some of the big players, like Big Point and InnoGames, which are doing free-to-play online games, and I think they belong to the biggest studios in Germany. But we also have a quite vivid indie dev scene in Hamburg.
That is awesome. Okay, by the way, before we start our chit-chat, maybe could you please give the audience quick introduction about yourself? Where are you working now? And what is your daily activity usually?
That's hard to say, but okay, I'm going to try my best. So, yes, as you already mentioned, I'm Valentina, and I'm a project manager for Indie Arena booth, which has been previously the physical events before COVID hit us all, and now we evolved from a physical only event company to an event company for online premium games. We basically make games. We developed a social MMO like convention game.
Ooh, and that's interesting.
It is hard to describe, but it changed my job description completely. So that's always something new now.
All right. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Indie Boot Arena, and we're going to talk about that MMO digital for the shifting from offline to online. But before we do that, we have some trivial question, a rapid question for you. So every guest in Press Start, we're going to have this question. Don't worry. There is no right or wrong. And then there's no leaderboard. So you don't have to think so hard about it. Just a simple question. All right. The first question. Do you remember what is the first game that you played?
I think it's probably Commander Keen or Earthworm Jim or something like this. But I think it is probably Commander Keen.
And how old are you the first time you play video games?
Around 6 or 7 or so. Like, my father was always interested in video games, and he let us play on his computer on a Windows 95.
Windows 95. All right. Okay, that's quite interesting. The next question. And what is the last game you played?
Oh, I'm currently playing Disco Elysium.
Disco Elysium.
I really like it. Like, I don't have time to play games anymore, and because I play so much for all the events we're doing. But Now they are mostly over. So since September, I started playing games again. And since that, I played God of War, finally. And I played Garden Story. And now I'm all hooked up with Disco Elysium.
I see. Okay. Do you consider yourself more like mobile gamers, PC gamer, or console gamers? Or you play on both every platform?
I'm more a console player, I would say, because I have a MacBook, and I don't know if you ever tried playing games on your Mac. It doesn't work that good. But I like most of the great indie games, they come out for PC. This is why I have a bootcamp partition on my MacBook. But it's, yeah, I would like to play more on console because it's more comfy and I like the controller more. But yeah, I have to play on on the Mac from time to time.
Yes. Especially when you creating games, you can don't use Mac, right? That's why you have bootcamp partition to play the game from indies. Yes. All right. And this is, I think, the last question, the last trivial question. What do you think the most important skill that you learn maybe in school or in your life that you find is the most useful in your career in the game industry?
I think it doesn't differ from other professions, because I think the main skill in every job, and especially in mine, is communicating. That's it.
And they don't teach that on school, right? Or do you have communication skill practice or subject in the school?
No, but I'm a studied social worker. And probably this helped me a lot with my communication skills, because I worked also as a social worker for 7 years after I studied, and just did events and gaming stuff on the side. And then I thought, like, okay, no, I'm going to join the gaming industry full on. But all my social worker skills, social work is basically project management, which includes you have to be transparent and talk a lot with people. So that's the same. I think that was helpful.
All right. That is interesting. Okay. Then by this question, maybe all of the audience can know you a little bit more, like the game that you like to play or you're playing right now, and the skill that you learned. Valentina, in this podcast, we will talk about, firstly, your journey into the video game industry. Maybe most of our audience is still new, or they just want to start their career in the industry, or maybe your story can inspire them to be a game developer or come into the game industry. So for starters, the first question is like, do you remember when was the first time that you want to become or you want to work in the game industry, and what is the trigger? Is it something that since you're little already, I want to work in the game industry, or this is something that happened a lot later on in your career?
I'm not sure. I think I joined more on accident. I don't know if this was really a plan from the beginning, but I was always interested in art and exhibitioning stuff. So I always loved the medium games and also the artistic matter and also the educational value of games. And I started working when I was a social worker. I also did workshops for kids and youth people on to show them like how is a game developed and what is the artistic value and such. And I made workshops for parents, teachers, and therapists on like what is a game, why do people like to play and such. And then I also started to doing exhibitions, video game exhibitions in museums, but also on festivals to put them together and have more like of a cultural approach on games. Because if you put a game in a museum, people are automatically like, who are probably before like, oh yeah, I don't like video games. But if you put it in a museum, people are like, oh, that's art. And I like to showcase meaningful work and having red threads over and over again. So this is, and then I accidentally joined the gaming industry because the curation was there. And then I quit my job as a social worker, and I already knew a lot of people from doing exhibitions and doing these workshops. Then I was somehow just there.
Okay, there's a lot of interesting point from what you said before, from like giving workshop to children about game to making games in the museum. I like to ask a little bit more about that. What kind of workshop usually you did before to children and to people?
And that, these are different workshops. It's super easy game development stuff, but like with fixed software, for example, using Codoo, which is from Microsoft. It's a game development software, like a what you see is what you get editor. They see that making a game is about making a concept, and if they like to enjoy playing games, that this might also encourage them to join the industry and be part of it. But the approach is more like, okay, you like a specific medium. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a professional to try it out. People encourage others to write books or make paintings. Video games are an art form as well, and it is more approachable than people think. And this is, I think, the basis on this of this workshops.
And how do you usually like the enthusiasm or the reception from the common people when they know game development? Is there like, hey, it's interesting, it's so easy, I think I'm gonna do it as a career, or like, I don't know, maybe is there any like negative rejection about game in Germany, that's why this workshop happened?
Most people in Germany, like adult people who didn't grow up with video games, they always have this kind of moral approach about video games, or it is often seen that, okay, this is just a hobby, and kids don't do it outside. Kids don't play video games outside, and the value they have is that kids should play outside, and they cannot do this if they play video games, and so it's a worthless hobby or so. This is also why I did the workshops with media educators, with teachers, with parents, and also therapists. And I just played games with them. I showed them some games in an artistic approach, like Monument Valley or such, and explained them that it's the same, because most of them are like, okay, but my kid, every time I tell them, quit Minecraft, they say, I don't want to. And then I'm like, yeah, but I just want to do this quest, or I just want to finish this. And if you tell them like, hey, what's it when you read a book and you're in the very last chapter, and someone says, no, you come now and do a different thing, you would be angry as well. So this is the same. It's a story, it's experiencing stuff, and then they get it like, oh yeah, okay, probably it's the same. And so,
wow, that's really interesting. And how about the teacher? Usually the teacher is like the biggest enemy of video game, because usually like games make the students lazy, don't want to do homework, something like that. When you get in touch with children or maybe with the therapist, what is the reception, or how's the experience giving workshop for them?
For the teachers, we also we educated them on how they can use video games in their lessons. For example, if you play Sims, you can make movies or comics with Sims, and you can use it like a cross-media approach. Like, for example, you read a book in the German lesson, and then they should summarize the book. Why not do it with Sims? Why not having a comic? Or if you want to teach them physics, why not play Minecraft with them? So they learn and can try out stuff, and it makes the lessons quite more interesting. And people, like, to be honest, teachers who ask us for advice in doing this, they they're already a bit open on like, okay, I could use this for educational purposes. So, but some are really like, but they play too much, right?
I see. Wow, that's really interesting. Is there, just out of curiosity, do you see any school maybe in Germany who use video game inside of their like maybe curriculum or the part of like study?
Yeah, in Hamburg we partnered up with a school, and they in Hamburg we have some kind of focus things, like it's a 2-year, people can focus on a different, they can focus on sports, they can focus on writing or whatever, on art or stuff like this. And we implemented in a school, in a district, a video game focus group, so that they would have us teaching them and doing stuff with video games implemented in their lessons and such. So, but this is the only, like, there are a few people who try this out, but this is the one thing we implemented, which was like, sustainable.
I see. Well, that's really interesting. I think that's something really cool if like students can learn using video games.
Yes. Yeah.
And the next thing that also still part of the topic, our current topic, is you mentioned that video game inside a museum. What kind of museum that we can combine video game with, and what is the medium looks like?
This was actually how we did a... We did an exhibition in a museum. It's the Museum of Arts and Crafts. So like trading stuff and such. And they always had some focused exhibitions on different topics. And they had one giant exhibition about video games. Anyways, like it was a curated, I think, I forgot the name of the giant exhibition, but I know it was developed in Australia. It showcased the history of video games and so on. And what we did as an initiative, we curated the game culture of Hamburg, like showcased what jobs are there in video games, what studios are there in Hamburg. And then we also did some classical interventions, it's called in the museum language, like you have some distractions from the normal exhibitions. This was the test balloon we tried. For example, they have a huge collection of Greek vases or so. And then we put an iPad there in a frame, and which was a game called Sisyphus. It looked like the guy going up that mountain. And it was in the exact same art style as the... art objects. So this is what we did, like showcasing indie games. But it was, this is something we did to distract people and confuse them.
Like in Indonesia, maybe a lot of museums start to lose traction and visitor because like young people doesn't like to go to a museum anymore. Is this the same case in Germany? Or there's still a lot of young people going to the museum, and games can improve like the engagement with young people?
Yeah, I think it's the same in Germany. Like the museums have to step up their digital game, and also the way they encourage kids and young people to visit them. Most of them have like the approach like, hey, let's do a rally and a quiz, like, but that's boring, that's not like it's nothing which is fun to do, like going through an exhibition and answering questions afterwards. I can do this in school as well, but they need to come up with exciting ways on how to engage the audience. And also I think with not losing the old one, because I know that I think the old audience is probably like a bit skeptical about new media. And it's a hard way to do.
yes, absolutely. I see. I think that's a great thing that maybe we can learn like in Indonesia, how you guys in Germany try to integrate games into the museum. I think there's not a lot of that initiative happening in Indonesia right now. That's very interesting.
It's also not happening a lot in Germany. It's just
really?
Some. Oh. Yeah, yeah. It's just like some. Most of the museums are a bit boring.
All right. Wow, that's really interesting topic. I think, okay, go to the next topic about the Indie Mega Booth. I think it's really, really interesting. Can you maybe explain a little bit to the audience what is Indie Mega Booth looks like before COVID? How usually the process and what are the activities that you do in the Indie Mega Booth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Indie Mega Booth is our American sister. We are Indie Arena Booth. Like, they are doing the same stuff. Yeah, it's different. But they, unfortunately, they are not around anymore since COVID. It's sad. But yeah, Indie Arena Booth is a shared developer booth on conventions for indie devs. Like, it was founded in 2013 by a bunch of indie dev friends who wanted to showcase their games at the biggest European convention for games, the Gamescom. Mm-hmm. But the showcasing prices weren't that affordable.
Yeah. It's pricey.
it's a lot. And so they were like doing it like a shared flat or something. They were like, okay, let's rent 40 square meters together as 10 studios, and we share everything, and then we can showcase our stuff. And from this, it was like, really, they built stuff. Like, the booth building part is also hard, like having wooden stuff and with no decoration and so on. And since that, more and more indies were like, hey, cool, you showcased at Gamescom last year, we want to do as well. And so it grew and grew and grew. And then in 2019, the last year before COVID, we had from 40 square meters in 2013, it was to 1,500 square meters. That's a lot.
Amazing. How many games? How many indie games is that in the arena last in 2019?
I think it's about 120.
Wow.
That's really a lot. And we focus a lot on curation, because each year we get more and more applications, but there is just so much we can provide in a good quality, because we're not only renting the space for everyone, but we also do the booth building. We are doing, like, paying a lot of money for all the lighting and making it beautiful, and also doing hardware sponsors, or finding hardware sponsors for the booth. So if you come from a foreign country, you don't have to pack all your computers in the airplane and to showcase on your own machine. But we provide all of this stuff, and also we are doing networking events with publishers and devs, and also the press. And we're doing quite a lot press work, and we have a streaming show. Like, we're doing the roundhouse kick of marketing stuff and building stuff. Yeah, this is basically it. So everyone can have a good time at Gamescom, focus on promoting their game, meeting publishers, and we take care of the rest. That's basically it.
I see. So it's not only for German game developers, but it's open for every developers around the world.
Yeah.
Wow. How many submissions for last Gamescom event in 2019?
In 2019, I think it's around 250 or so.
Wow. And you need to play all the games?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. This is why I don't play games, you get this.
Wow, that's amazing.
We also have an international jury which helps us with the submitted games. Like, we're not deciding everything on our own, which obviously makes sense, because if I would just decide, you, and you, it would just be narrative point and click adventures, walking simulators. Everyone would be bored as hell, but I like them. But we have a huge international jury which helps us selecting the games each year, and then we decide on other factors, because we just have the big jury meeting, and then we decide, okay, we want to have an interesting mix of genres and also, of course, of countries. We want to have the widest audience possible and so on. This is, and also a mix of, okay, this is still in development. They released recently or they will release during Gamescom or so. So this is all the different things we keep in mind while selecting.
Yes, yes. Actually, the last offline Gamescom, Indonesia also make a booth right in Gamescom, and I also came and visit the Indie Arena booth, and so some people from Indonesia, I think, opening the booth over there, like Toge Productions.
Yeah, and, Toge were there. That's right. Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. By the way, before we moving forward, I wanted to know, like, this is called the Indie Arena booth, right? Maybe a lot of, maybe some of the audience or the listeners this podcast still doesn't understand what is exactly indie, what makes it different with other game developers in the world or company.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, an indie developer is someone who doesn't have a publisher, like in the normal wording, but... Mm-hmm. It's small team sizes who are a bit more free. They have more creative freedom because they do develop a game which they believe in and don't have like a... If you make a game for a super huge company like, I don't know, EA, then you have a lot of company measures, 100 people talking about that game to have certain values and so on. And if indie developers are mostly like small teams, starting from one person armies to bigger ones who are actually a studio. And yeah, but in my opinion, indie developers can also have a publisher and develop themselves indie, but they have a publisher. Having a publisher doesn't make you less indie, in my opinion, because everyone needs funding and so on. So that's not a criteria for me personally.
How big is the company until we can say that you're not indie anymore?
That's a tough question. We always talk about that. 50 people probably, but I think it's not like, okay, you have 49 people, you're still indie, and then you're 50 and no, you have no indie rights anymore. It's hard. I think indie is also a bit of a mindset and a bit of a spirit, so it's really hard to say.
Yes, because it's also happening in Indonesia. Like, we have an exhibition event, like we have an indie awards, and one of the winner of the categories is a company with almost 200 employees, but we still categorize them as indie, and a lot of people are making question, is this company still indies?
Yeah,
that's why
it is hard to estimate. I don't know. Normally, you would say, for example, CD Projekt Red, they don't have a publisher, they self-publish their games. Are they indie? I don't know.
Or Destiny, after they get divorced with Microsoft, is they still indie right now? But they're doing a AAA budget games.
I have no clue. It's hard.
Is this something that happened also when the jury is doing curation? Like, hey, is this guy still indies, or I think they're not supposed to be here?
Yeah, this is some discussions we always have. Is this still indie? And I think if they are having, I don't know the English word, like if you trade papers somewhere, what's the word for that? What the brokers and people with fancy suits do, you know?
Doing business or what?
Yeah, they have, if you sell parts of your company for a, I don't know the word.
Stocks?
Stocks. Yeah, stocks. If you're a stock noticed company, then you're probably not indie anymore. I think this is a rule of thumb you can have.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's quite... All right. Okay, so back to the Indie Arena booth. Okay, usually you make this booth in the B2C area, right? Not the B2B area. And they usually a lot of big company make a very fancy booth and some of the biggest title who hasn't been released and players can get a sneak peek, something like that. Is there do you think like the audience of like Gamescom consider Indie Arena booth as something interesting for them to come visit and try and to play, or like a lot of the audience will get absorbed to the big booth from the big games company?
I think both. Like some visitors of Gamescom are solely interested in seeing AAA games. That's how it is. But Indie Arena booth has a different charm. For example, at a normal big AAA booth, people have to stand in line for 6 to 8 to 9 to 10 hours to get a glimpse of a 15-minute gameplay footage. And they come to Indie Arena booth because of a lot of reasons. The devs are there. They don't have to stand in line. Most of the time. Okay, they have to wait for 10 minutes to play a game or so, but then they go to the next because we have on 120 different games on 1,500 square meters. There is space. Then they can ask questions to the game developers themselves. Like there's no marketing person who stands next to the booth and tells them some marketing bullshit, but there's the developer and they can ask them like, hey, how did you develop this? And what does this mean? And so on. And I think this is something which is super interesting for people. And also, because of our strong curation, like people know when they come to visit Indie Arena booth, these are the 120 best indie titles which are there. And this is why press and and consumers come to us, because they know, okay, this is some kind of an excellent thing. All of them were selected by Indie Arena booth. It's worth taking a look. Like this. So, and we won also the Best Booth Award in 2019 of Gamescom, competing to all the big people out there with their budgets. Oh, so this is something...
That's amazing.
Yeah, we won. Normally, people win this for like, 2K showcasing their new title, blah, 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 and spending lots of money for their booth building. And we have like just a tenth of their budget and still won that title. So, and it was an audience and jury vote. So probably people are interested in that.
That is interesting. That means like from the consumer perspective, like indie games also really, really interesting for them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And based on like, there's a hundreds of indie developers fly to Gamescom and they open their booth over there for like four days usually,
five days. There's business days, two business days, and then three consumer days.
Yes. And what usually the developers find in the arena booth? Do they find more sales because they can promote to more customers, audience, and visitor, or do they usually showcase their games to find media to write articles about their games, or they come to Indie Arena to find publishers or investor for funding for the game?
I think it's mostly really the business aspect. Like they are trying to find publishers, investors, and also network with people from all over the industry. And the second part is press coverage. And I think for teams, depending on how far you are in the game development, there are different things important. For example, if you just released the game, then the user feedback is not that important anymore because you will get it on Steam. But if you are pre-release, you can watch people play your demo and see where are they stuck and interact with them and ask them, hey, what did you like? And so on. So in different phases of development, it can make sense to showcase at Gamescom or at Indie Arena booth and then get different things out of it. Like that's, but I think the business aspect is what makes Gamescom as an event attractive for people and Indie Arena booth a good place to be, because people who come to Indie Arena booth, they know there's indie games, they want to publish indie games. We also have a lot of publishers directly at our booth, and you can make appointments with them and so on.
Okay. To explain more to the listener of this of the podcast, usually what kind of deal happening in the arena between the developers and publishers do, like maybe like what usually publishers do to help the indies over there?
Like what? Sometimes they just scout the publishers. Mm-hmm. They just browse around and see like, hey, what game could be interesting for me as a publisher? But mostly it's just like the networking with the indie dev, seeing if I think there was in 2019, there was one signing an indie
happening
directly
inside the booth?
At the booth.
Oh,
yes.
Like, on the spot, signing up. Yeah, oh my God. Did you take a picture?
They were neighbors. No, but they were neighbors. Uh-huh. And like on the other side. And after 5 days, they uh-huh. talked enough and found a deal. And they knew each other before a bit. And then were like, okay, let's. I just have my publishing contract. Here it is.
Okay.
But this amazing. Is, I think, this is an exception. Normally, right. It's just about, hey, I can pitch you my game, and then let's do an appointment after Indie Arena booth is over, and then we talk like a back and forth. That's normally the thing.
Mm-hmm. And the publisher usually also do the funding, right, for the games, or not?
Some like there are different forms of publishing deals. Mm-hmm. This really depends on from publisher to publisher, and also from team to team what they are searching for. Mm. So some publishers some devs need funding for their game because they don't have any money, or they can't have the governmental funds, which we also have in Germany, and so they need funding. But some already have their game finished, and then they just need marketing assistance, because this is something you cannot do most of the time if you're just a 3-person studio. Yep. And then you need to do all the Q&A, you need to do all the community building, and then also market your game. That's hard. So this is I think marketing is always part of a publisher deal, but the depending on funding is back and forth, and depends on what the team is searching for. Some also need Q&A assistance before and such. So it can vary from game to game.
I see. Yeah. So that's one of the place for you if you make games and you need more funding to the game, or you already almost finished and you want someone to help you market the game, you can register to Indie Arena booth and open a booth over there and meet a lot of publishers and other game developers around the world, and maybe like get some funding and publisher over there, right? By the way, I might miss it. Is it free for the indies, or there's some cost that you need to pay?
This is pretty expensive, to be honest, because we always have to pay the prices from Gamescom and all the other stuff. But we are mostly financed over sponsors. But normally it depends on the booth size, and it is still super expensive. I think the smallest booth is €1,800 or so. It was in the previous, in 2019, was the smallest, and the biggest is 3,600, which has more space then. But it's still, it's still expensive. But yeah, that's a pity, to be honest. Like, we're always searching for sponsors to decrease the overall amount, or for people to give out wild cards. Like, for example, we had deals with some drink sponsors, like cola, like Coke sponsors, and they paid the booths for people. Like we said, okay, we want to open up for people from other backgrounds who don't have such a lot of money, and then they can apply for special things. But this is depending year to year if we find partners for this.
I see. And by the way, is it in the Arena Booth only happen in Gamescom, or all the exhibition in around Europe there's going to be an in the Arena Booth?
We are also at other events from time to time. But in the Arena Booth at Gamescom is the biggest one because it's the biggest convention. Like we were on other events, we're like 500 square meters or less. But we are mainly focusing on Gamescom.
I see. Okay. Next, for the most interesting part of our podcast, when the COVID hit and everybody moved to digital and online, how you managed to adapt, and is it the same experience offline and online, or like there's some better, someone is not?
It was super hard, to be honest. Because when COVID hit, it was in March and Gamescom was in August. And in March, I think everyone wasn't sure what it is. Like, is it really bad? Or can we just stay home 2 weeks and then in 3 weeks it's all good again, right?
Yep, yep,
so
yep.
Nobody really knew, including us. And the first time and also our submission for the Gamescom was already open and nobody knew, okay, is Gamescom happening? What's happening? And so on. And I think it hit us when GDC, which is the biggest developers conference worldwide in March, when they said they won't take place. It was the first time like, a big event is not happening. So probably it's the same happening to Gamescom. What are we going to do then? Mm. We are a physical event company. We are like bankrupt then if the events are not there. And so we made a game jam pretty early, I think beginning of April or so, with befriended indie devs. And we also have the background that we were formerly an indie studio, and then we formed an event company and just did events. And that now we made a game jam with all of our befriended indie devs and created a prototype for Indie Arena Booth Online. I think the prototype was ready in beginning of May, and then we needed funding for this. That was the hardest part, because it costs a lot of money to develop something from the scratch. And so we showed everyone, like my boss and I, we just showed everyone. We had calls daily, showed people the prototype, like befriended publishers, but also long-term partners and so on, like local partners from games, but also the German government, and showed all of them the prototype and said, hey, this is what we're going to do in just 3 months. And hey, give us some money. And also the prototype was just a prototype. Like, we developed the concept and pitched the game at the same time, and also needed to communicate to our exhibitors that, hey, you submitted for a physical event. We're going to do something online. We don't know yet, but do you still want to be part? And it was a roller coaster, right? But then we managed to develop this platform. The first iteration was, buggy, I would say. It was more some kind of an open alpha. We shipped a booth editor. Like, each participating dev could build their own booth. And then we put it all together. And the booth editor is something like a mixture of Sims and Minecraft. You just drag and drop the stuff, but way more complicated, because you also have to do the layering, the colliders, and also it crashed from time to time and so on. So then we had a huge map. We had 220 different booths, which were basically own levels, like 220 levels of indie games. It was too much, to be honest. But it was what we did then, and it worked out quite good because we had so much support from people, like the German government. They supported us. Then also some other people like Game City Hamburg and other partners, which were long-term partners, and also the publishers and the devs, they trusted us. They didn't knew what we are doing because we didn't knew what we were doing, but they still trusted us enough because they knew us long enough and said, like, okay, we know you're going to do your best and we know your best is a good thing. So here, take our money, our trust. And yeah, we also partnered up with other people, like, for example, with Steam, who really supported us. We made a Steam festival with the participating games, and they really, really supported us and helped us to make a really good online event. And also GOG, they did some editorial content and a sales event. And then we had a lot of streamers who were supporting us. And like, there was really a lot of support. And this is why it worked out then in the end.
That is interesting. And how do you think about the impact of the event for the indies? Is it like, is it the same or is it better? Or like, the how do you compare with the offline event?
It is really good. Like, it is, there are some advantages, definitely. Like, for example, the Steam event and the international, like, we opened up our audience to a global audience, and we needed to do more other media stuff, like with the Steam, with the GOG, with also with our press work, with the streaming and such. We reached a global audience. Normally it's all German when we stream or so. The Steam event and the GOG event was the most added value, I think, because at conventions, or at least in Germany, I don't know how it is in other conventions, but you're not allowed to sell your games directly at the convention, at the show floor. It's also hard to gain wish lists, which is also some kind of currency, right? Because people play your game and then you need to have the iPad, you stand with the iPad next to them. Hey, wish you list. Want a wish list? Now, nobody does it then. So I think this was a clear advantage for everyone who participated, that they had the opportunity to gain wish lists, showcase their demos, because we also did this with Steam, and connect with more press and more streamers on a global level than it would have been possible on a physical way, I think. But it also depends more on what you do, like how you engage your communities as a dev, if you are being seen, because by accident someone stumbles on your game doesn't happen, or you by accident stumble into your next future publisher. This is harder. You have to do really more work from your own. And I think this is the disadvantage of the online thing, is that these by accident connections, that they do not happen that much online.
I see. Yeah, because sometimes usually the deals happens not on the booth, but when you grab some food outside and you meet someone and then, hey, you're from there, something like that. That cannot happen yet. Okay. If the COVID is already gone, like, maybe I think Gamescom in Singapore already tried to do hybrid, like they already open up some area for visitors to come. If the offline event can also happen again next year, maybe in Germany, do you think you still want to use the online platform, or you will go back to the offline booth?
I think I really want to do both, because it has so many advantages also on a social level to open it up for people who don't want to be at cramped convention centers with 360,000 people. If I see pictures now, it's like, oh God.
Yes, that's true.
I get anxiety just from the pictures, but I think there are people who have anxiety of that even before COVID. So, and I think it makes everything a more global approach. So I would really love to have the face-to-face interaction with everyone again, because it's it's beautiful and I love this. But the online world is also something which you cannot cut off. It is just too mighty and too good as a marketing thing for, and too valuable for all the participating devs that you can just tell them, yeah, like, no, we're not doing it anymore. And we developed our platform so far that, for example, they didn't have to build their own booths this time. Like, we did it all. We did level design. We decreased the booth sizes. We increased the interaction and the user engagement and so on. So it's not much work for them. So I think that's it's a thing we should definitely continue to have a hybrid event, whatever this will look like. I think this is the challenge of next year, to make a good hybrid approach that it feels like one, and not like, okay, he is offline, he is online.
Yes, that's quite challenging. And I think one of the advantage of having online booth like this is also not only the price for opening up the booth in Gamescom's expensive, but like the airplane ticket, like the hotel, I think the price went around on Gamescom, like, inflating so much. Yeah, it can cut a lot of costs for indie developers, right?
And also, I think I think we need to think everything completely new, like what adds value and physical events, and how can we do this in a meaningful way? Because I remember that pre-COVID, it was totally normal that you go to a different city to meet someone, like for a business thing. Like, I drove to Cologne all the time, which is a 4-hour train ride. And now if I want to meet with someone from Cologne, I can just do it. Like, I don't have to waste a whole day to, like, why? It doesn't make sense.
Yep. Yes, that's really interesting. Oh, okay. So, Valentina, so it really nice talking to you, and our time is almost running out. So I think this is the last question. Can you already play and created a lot of indie games around the world, and you also already seen indies thrive in the arena booth and around the ecosystem. What can you give, like, some tips, or like you see like some pattern, like the most successful indie booth that they do, indie developers that they do, that you can give to all of these new game developers in Indonesia?
I'm also part of a lot of juries, and also for like funding stuff and so on. And I think the importance of a good pitch deck is not to be underestimated. Like, if you're searching for funding or for a publisher or so on, it is super important to have a good pitch deck with a lot of pictures. And if you can, moving images work. Like, just a video or something, and try to compare your game if you are pitching for funding or for a publisher. Try to keep people, like, try to deliver something to people that they understand. Like, say, hey, my game is a mix of Minecraft and God of War or whatever. Like, find the things people know and bring this together so it explains your game. And this is, I think, something like, if you're searching for funding and searching for a pitch deck, but also the comparison with stuff people already know may be interesting also from marketing perspectives. That's, I think, because I read a lot of pitch papers, and most people don't do it, and I want pictures and comparisons.
Yes, I think that's really valid. Yes. And how about the game? You play a lot of games, and what makes a game stand out than the other games?
This is super subjective. But I think if you develop a game, I think a tip I can give you is you need to find the fun fast. Like, that's if you have a blown up concept and you want to transport all of this stuff, find the game mechanic angle, which is entertaining and fun to use super fast. Mm. And if you cannot have the concept for the fun part or for the engaging part, it doesn't have to be always fun. You can also make like story games which are not fun or other games which are not fun, but find the game mechanic angle fun, fast. And also, don't just show it to your friends and family who will anyway say, hey, it's nice, you did something. And listen to feedback and ask people who know things. And that's, we always do this as well. As we showed the prototype before we pitched it, we showed them to a lot of our publisher friends and our game dev friends and say, hey, here's the concept. What do you think? And some gave us like really harsh feedback, but it made our game better because we know they want us to be better. And so we made it better. So that's, yeah.
And how about the other side of the coin? Like the first is like the game that make you like remember the game, like the standout. And how about the other side? What kind of game that usually make the jury or the creator like in the first maybe like 10 seconds like, I don't want to play this game? Have you ever met the games like that and how to avoid that to happen?
I think that's super hard and super subjective. Mm. Because it's like it's hard. I wouldn't recommend, for example, starting with a giant wall of text, which nobody wants to read. Like that's something. But that is super hard if it fits to your story. But if you need to start with, for example, for a story element, then try to get a voiceover and at least for the beginning, so people don't have to do the work because they won't. And a voiceover, it doesn't have to be super expensive. You can also ask on Twitter for people who want to voice act just like the first sequence or so. Like keep it interesting. And the people who play your game or who judge your game, they are lazy and they are doing not only your game, but they are seeing
hundreds of
25
games.
million games. And it's, you need to stand out. Pictures. Mm. Keep it super short. Don't explain the super nice back arc of the character, which is super interesting and super well thought of. But keep it short, keep it simple. And also, this is for the game design. Keep it short, keep it simple, so people understand. Mm.
I think it's also connect with our first discussion about the skill is communication. It's also like communicating your game, like the premise as fast as possible so you can get the attention of maybe the jury, maybe the your potential publisher or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And also the player, just the player. The player. They are super important.
Yes, I think that's most important, the player. The ones who are going to buy your games, yes.
Yes.
All right then. Okay, thank you very much, Valentina, for your time, for coming and sharing your story to us. And I think that's it for today's session. I hope this session can give all of you insight and courage to press start your career as a game developers. I'm Adam Arisa Smita. Keep playing games. Start making games. Thank you, Valentina. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.